But what's your story today?
Okay, my story today is the American Taliban, which I never heard of it until last year. I don't think a lot of people our age.
I've heard the term, but I've never really, known what that means.
It's literally one person. I'm not joking, it's literally one person. His name's John Walker Lind. Does that name sound familiar? Which is, it's a pretty basic name, but... basically, he was an American person who was caught being part of the Taliban immediately after 9/11, and so it was this big deal because 9/11 and the Taliban.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, the Taliban, yeah.
And 9/11, yeah.
Rings a bell.
What would have been crazy is if we said that, we were at recording 9 minutes and 11 seconds.
Oh, I thought you said we were, but we were.
For everyone listening, we could be.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, his name is John Walker Lind. He was born in 1981 in Washington, D.C. to, some pretty normal parents. I think
so young.
Yeah, it was... He would have been, 20 or something at the time of 9/11. But yeah, his dad was a social worker, and I forget what his mom did. But they ended up moving to Marin County, California, where he went to a bunch of different schools. So for a while, he was homeschooled. And then he went to public school, but nobody really liked him. And then he went to, some weird, progressive California school where, there were no classes. You just, self-read and then, reported back to, a counselor or whatever.
Was the counselor a chicken? How progressive was it?
I don't know. Yeah, but, it's kind of cool, but also...
It sounds like he had a couple routes in life. Either CEO, tech bro, cult joiner or terrorist joiner. So yeah. This kind of makes sense. He was definitely conditioned just to go with the flow and follow.
Yeah, and obviously the far right hates this fucking guy down the road, and they try to attribute his liberal upbringing to the path that he ended up on. So
his parents kind of sound like hippies.
Yeah. Or yeah, they're progressive for sure. Yeah. So he does weird things on the internet, which I guess the internet in the 90s, what you can do. I have no idea what it was like in the 90s, but basically he pretends to be a black guy on the internet, but for the purpose of defending black people. Somebody will say something racist and he'll be like, I'm a 30-year-old black man and this offends me, and people so it's a weird kind of trolling. It's social justice,
yeah,
but catfishing.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. So he's an original catfish. Eventually, he reads the autobiography of Malcolm X and then also sees the movie, which is where Muslim people are depicted in the movie. Mm-hmm. And he goes to, I think in the movie they go to Mecca, which Mecca's that big stone thing.
It's the Mecca, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, though, for real?
No.
Okay, I think that Mecca is this big stone that's in whatever Middle Eastern country, and that's where everybody prays to, so when they face a certain direction... It's they're facing towards Mecca, and then there's events, I think once a year or something that everybody travels to Mecca. Not literally everybody, but if you can make it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's once a year or what it is, but basically there's a huge event where everybody goes, but that's where they pray towards when they do. So anyways, he sees this Mecca, and he likes the idea of traditional beliefs, and that Muslim people are attracted to him, the religion, because of their traditional values and stuff. He's a straight-edge kind of dude. And at this time, America doesn't have such hate for Muslim people, so it's not that big of a deal. So anyways, at 17, he decides that he wants to go to Yemen to learn Arabic, which he's basically, treated as a study abroad type thing for him. Again, it's, weird that he wants to go to Yemen, but it's not,
We know those kids.
It's kind of people who would go to, France, but... Yemen, I don't know. Yeah. It's not really where people want to go, but it's still treated like a study abroad thing.
Only movie I've ever walked out of in my life. Oh, no. I've walked out of two, but both were, not the other people wanted to go. I brought my friend to see salmon fishing in the Yemen. And then she was like, buddy, we're the youngest people in here by 60 years. We need to go now. We didn't even pay to be here because, I worked there, so I got free tickets at the time. So I was like, okay, fair enough. But I was like, but I kind of want to see how this ends. I'm a little interested. And then the other one was my mom brought me to a Meryl Streep, Steve Carell, Tommy Lee Jones movie where they were talking about blowjobs. And then my mom was like, this is trash. And then she was talking to the 18-year-old theater worker of how could they put this trash out here? This isn't appropriate. There should be warnings. And I was just sitting there We could have seen super bad. Like, this is so, like, calm the hell down, lady. Yeah. Because that's happened to me about when I worked at the theater. But for Men in Black 3, like, this old man was just like, this is absolute trash. Like, how could you, like, not award it or anything? Like, this is for children. But I wouldn't let children see this. And oh, I was like, dude. Yeah, I can untear your ticket, I suppose. Like, I don't know.
You might have worked at the movie theater when this movie came out. Do you remember superhero movie? Drake Bell was, like, the superhero in it. It was, like, a kind of, like, scary movie, but for superheroes, where it was just a parody on, like, all these superhero movies that were coming out.
And Drake Bell was still relevant.
Yeah, Drake Bell was relevant. And he was, like, the Spider-Man type deal of the movie, and his, like, origin story is that he, like, spilled a bunch of pheromones on himself or something, and, like, all these animals are, like, humping him in the beginning, and all these parents leave because it's, like, PG-13 and Drake Bell's in it, so, like, they brought, like, a bunch of young kids, and, like, within the first 15 minutes, like, all these parents are taking their kids and leaving because it's just, like, super inappropriate.
I think that happened with that movie Sausage Party. Like, people thought it was probably a kid's movie. I remember that was the only movie I've ever, like, we were watching it one night, like, coming home from the bar in college. And I was like, I'm so, like, grossly offended right now. Like, this is just gross. And I gave, like, 1 star on IMDb, and I was like, I will never watch this.
I kind of like that
movie. I
watched,
like, 30 minutes of it. I did not.
All right, so back at it. So at 17, he goes to Yemen or whatever. He gets there, and all the other kids there are, like, typical study abroad kids. They just want to, like, party and drink and do whatever they want, I guess. But he's there to learn about, like, Arabic and the Islam culture. This podcast I listened to about it kind of points out the fact that this is the time kids join fraternities, and later when we learn about the Taliban, a lot of the people that were in the, like, actual, like, front lines of the Taliban were also young men, because it's, like, you know, a perfect time for them to find community and be, like, around other toxic men.
Yeah.
Okay, so eventually when he's abroad, he just leaves behind his old name. He adopts some Islam name or an Islamic name, and then he leaves behind all his Western belongings and, like, fully adapts. Basically, people who are in defense of him say this is when he starts to get shielded from info. So things happen around the world. Like, I think America bombs somewhere in Africa at some point, and he's told about it from, like, the lens of, you know, Middle Eastern people. Yeah. So it's like he could be getting some, like, skewed information, but nobody really knows for sure. So he goes to Pakistan to further learn about Islam and to memorize the Quran by heart. And then when he's studying Pakistan, it, like, borders on Afghanistan, and I guess, like, everybody there is talking, like, really highly of the Taliban. They're considered freedom fighters at the time, because, really long story short, is I didn't understand the Iraq war until I learned about this. Did you? Okay, Afghanistan was taken over, or not taken over, but there was Russian forces that were really swaying Afghanistan because they were kind of becoming, like, communist in a way. And so Russia was supporting that communist kind of thinking in Afghanistan. That's how their government was. The Taliban was fighting these the Russians. Communists. And so we were backing the Taliban until 9/11 happened. And then we flipped and we joined Russia and we started to fight the Taliban. So it's all really complicated, but at the time that he joins the Taliban, we know they're bad people, but we just don't care. Like, we know that they're, like,
they're not an imminent threat yet.
Yeah, like, they serve our political need, but we know that they're, like, beheading people and shit, but we're not, like, but we're like, oh, but they're fighting Russia, so it's cool. So anyways, he goes, they're talking really good about the Taliban, so he joins, and we'll learn later that he's disconnected from what Islam should be in practice and, like, what it actually is in the modern world. And so he thinks that, like, oh, you know, they wouldn't kill women and children, but, like, in practice, neither would Christians, but, like,
it happens.
Yeah, but, like, that's what's happening in the world. So he's in the thick of things because he thinks that he's helping oppressed Muslims, and he doesn't seem to have a political stake in it. So it's not, like, America versus Afghanistan to him. It's, like,
Islam. People he's around being attacked by people on, like, outside forces.
Yeah, it's religious oppression, and that's what he cares about. And so he enters into the Taliban as a foot soldier in a regional fight between them and some local warlords. And during this time, he actually meets Osama bin Laden. But bin Laden wasn't famous yet, and it's basically the equivalent of, like, the CEO of, like, Enterprise coming to Enterprise when I work there. Like, they don't give a shit about me. They literally just, like, say hi, and they're like, oh, good work, you know? So fast forward to November of 2020, or 2001. 9/11 happens, obviously, and then the country's in, like, a huge state of paranoia. When I'm watching this documentary, it was freaking me out because, like, honestly, but it's probably a really scary time to be, like, a conscious adult.
Yeah.
So anyways, the country's in, like, a heightened state of paranoia because, like, 9/11 happened, and then the anthrax scares happened, which is actually really terrifying. So I guess it was, like, a really scary time to be an adult in America. Mm-hmm. So, like, tensions are high, and there was a quote from Bush in this documentary that he says, "It's time we win the first war of the 21st century decisively," and I'm like, damn, that's kind of, like, really freaky to be, like...
Those are very hard-hitting words.
Yeah, like, the first war of the 21st century. Like, we're 21 centuries into recorded history, and we're still fighting wars. But, basically, John's unit surrenders because of power shifts that are happening in Afghanistan at the time, and so they surrender to... some, like, warlord guy there that's, like, kind of on the American side, and the guy's like, yeah, I'll escort you guys back to the rest of the Taliban, but we're taking your weapons, and you're, like, taking this convoy. Basically, not everybody gave up their weapons, so they did, but, like, some guys snuck in grenades in their, like, pockets or in their underwear and stuff, and so while they're on their way to what they think is safety, but really they were always being sent to this prison, they just didn't know it. But anyways, while they're on their way there, some guy throws a grenade next to the truck, and this, like, immediately just flips the scenario, and they take all 460 of these guys that were being escorted, and they put them in the basement of this, like, supposedly great prison. Or, like, when you see it, it doesn't look like it would be very high security, but I guess it, like, is very high security. So anyways, there's 460 people in this basement, which is only 5 rooms. And they're separated by natives and non-native volunteers. So basically people who were, like, born in Afghanistan and people who were, like, coming from other countries to support it. Basically, apparently they don't speak Arabic, which I thought that they did.
What do they speak?
Some, like, I don't know if it's, like, a dialect or what, but it's, I didn't write it down. But anyway, so John's part of this group that speaks Arabic, but that doesn't speak the full language. So basically he's on a part that's, like, we don't want to do this anymore, like, things have gotten out of hand, and then there's, like, these other people in the 460 that are, like, we will die for this cause.
Yeah.
Like, so things are getting messy. The CIA gets split up into a bunch of different cities because there's a lot of other shit going on, and so only 2 CIA guys go to this prison where there's 400 to 500 prisoners, and they have no commander or, like, large team with them or anything. There's a bunch of news crews or, like, war reporters there, but there's not... there's not enough people for 460 prisoners. So anyways, this guy, Mike Spann, he's a CIA agent. He's interviewing these prisoners one by one. They're pulling them out of the thing and, or out of the basement and putting them in the courtyard. One by one, they're interviewing them, seeing who speaks English, seeing if they can find Osama bin Laden through some knowledge of any one of these people. Obviously, no one's talking to them. And so Spann is interviewing John in front of, like, 400 of these prisoners, and they're recording him. There's, like, footage of this, and they're asking him questions. John doesn't say a single word to Spann, even when it's clear that Spann is with America, and is, like, I think at one point he tells them that, like, America was bombed, or that 9/11 happened, and John still doesn't respond. So John probably knew what was gonna happen next, but he still didn't say anything. But there's a little debate on if he actually knew or not, because he didn't speak the language of the other people. So basically, the next prisoner to come out comes out and blows up a grenade, and a riot ensues. And so Mike Spann, the CIA agent, was killed in this explosion, and he's considered the first American casualty in the War on Terror.
Damn.
And so...
not a great title.
What? Yeah, the first American.
Yeah, oof.
Yeah, so anyway, so Spann dies from this explosion, and after that, gunshots are fired, and people were running everywhere. It's like this huge prison uprising, which, again, there's 460 prisoners, and there's, like, a handful of Americans, or American allies. They push the prisoners back into the basement, or at least the people that they could, and John spent the whole uprising in the basement of this prison, which this uprising was 7 days long. It was, like, a whole, like, siege. The CIA operatives call out with a cameraman's phone, and they're literally calling for backup. So calm, he's just like, yeah, he literally says, we fucked up. Like, the CIA, the other CIA agent that's alive is like, we fucked up, my team isn't here, like, we need backup. And he has to make it clear that they need backup and that they can't just come and bomb the prison from above. because they're still Americans mm-hmm. there. And so the weapons that they took from these guys mm-hmm. are in the same courtyard that they're bringing them out to. So when everything happens, the Americans, like, exit the prison. But then all these Taliban members are stuck inside of this prison with a barrage of weapons. Like, all the weapons that they had before. So they're just, like, holding the fort down with all these fucking weapons. There were, like, 100 of them dead or more, like, right away. But then the newsman and the CIA operative that are still alive, they just dip and they try to run as far as they can mm-hmm. because they see fighter jets coming. The fighter jets come and miss somehow. They, like, do not hit the prison. But the prisoners take control from the inside out, and they're just, like I said, it's a 7-day thing that's going on from... Well, I put Sunday to Friday, so maybe it was like 5 days. But anyways, one of the structures inside of the prison, the basement that they're hiding mm-hmm. in, is a fucking bomb shelter. So, like, these guys are set up to yeah. just hold this place for a good while.
They had the upper hand in the situation.
Yeah, definitely. And so things get, like, even messier. America, or American allies, they start dumping 55-gallon drums of oil into the basement. And through, like, holes and vents and stuff that they can. And then they throw grenades in after it. So it's just fucking, like, hellfire. There's, like, hundreds of people in this basement. It's on fire. And, up, like, if they go up above ground, then there's just, like, a war zone of, like, gunshots and everything. So they're just fucked either way. And John's down there the whole entire fucking time. And so, eventually, he decides to leave the basement because it's flooded by the U.S., like, with actual water. Mm-hmm. And so people are drowning because the water goes, like...
all the way
up
yeah.
to the top. And so he found, like, a stick or something that he could, like, balance on and, like, still get breath. But basically there's just dead bodies floating in this water, and it's fucked.
Yeah.
So he spent 20 hours in the basement with the dead bodies as it was flooded. Wow. And then at some point they all decide to leave.
Yeah.
Or the 86 people that are still alive in this basement decide to leave. And so after the siege, he is brought out, and he acts like super unrepentant. If you look at, like, video footage of this guy, he looks fucking terrifying. Well, one, he's, like, raggedy as fuck. He's got, like, a huge beard. Mm-hmm. Super long hair. He's so dirty that, like, he, like, the whites of his eyes are, like, piercing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, the only thing of white, color. Yeah. It's so fucking terrifying. And so he is being recorded right after being pulled out. They put him in the back of a truck, and it's unclear to me if they knew that he was American at the time. But they are recording him, and he's like, you don't have permission to film me. You don't have permission to film me. And they're like, okay. It's a fucking whore. Like, we ask everybody. So anyways, everyone's basically unconscious, and they're super roughed up. And he can barely answer any questions, but for some reason he can still say, you don't have permission to film me. So, like, this is where I feel weird about him, because I'm like, he says... he was distraught.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, he spent 7 days in a basement.
But can come to and be like, hey, don't put me, yeah, I don't want my face on this.
Still has a loose enough thought to be like, this can't go on the news.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's weird to me. I feel like if I was, like, in that much shock.
I wouldn't notice.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
So then, at this point, they figure out that he's an American, and they take him to, like, this hospital, which is fucked. This hospital looks like a basement in an abandoned hospital for, like, it was abandoned for, like, 30 years. Mm-hmm. There's just bodies on the ground. There's, like, one table. There's no equipment whatsoever. Like, this, I don't understand how this was considered a hospital. It's pretty fucked up. But anyways, so CNN is recording him, and they're asking about who his family is, like, what their name is. They say it so that they can, like, contact mm-hmm. them. And they're like, this is for your well-being. And he's like, if you really had my well-being in mind, then you would stop recording me. Like... I just feel like he knows what's going on a little bit. And so the documentary tries to tackle the idea of, like, why treason is so bad, which I kind of do find interesting. Because it's like, we all feel strongly and distasteful about it, but, like...
when it comes down to it, what would you do while you're in another country kind of thing? Define treason, man.
Yeah, or, like, well, that's, like, the big thing is, one, define treason, and two, like... he didn't technically do anything against America. Like, mm-hmm. he wasn't part of 9/11. He wasn't the one that actually killed the CIA agent. So, like, did he really commit treason? And also, like...
he was just in the wrong place at the very, very wrong time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's really confusing. So, it does seem like he knows that something is wrong or that he's in the wrong... like, I don't know. He just, like, is weirdly emotionless, which gave me a bad taste, but whatever. he doesn't point out that he's American or say, like, treat me special because I'm American or anything like that. Like, he's basically acting like, you know, I deserve whatever is coming to me or something like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's not like, oh, these people are American, I'm American, I can get
help. He's not going back to being American to get out of it or anything.
Exactly, yeah. He's, like, full converted at this time. After the initial hospitalization, he's taken to a place called Camp Rhino, which is, like, a newly built prison in Afghanistan. And they just treat him like shit there. They basically, like, blindfold him, and some soldiers take pictures of him that got leaked where on his blindfold they wrote shithead, and then they're all just, like, fucking taking photos with him, and he has no idea what's going on. And Fox News, of course, ate the shit up. There is an interview from this girl who's, like, a anchor for Fox News. She's like, John Walker Lynn, like, he killed Mike Spann, the CIA agent, like, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, but he didn't. No. Like, there's literal footage, like, he didn't do it. But they're, like, pinning this on him, even though he was not the active killer in that situation. He just, like, was there. So this is a total scapegoat situation. It's right after 9/11. It's the first terrorism prosecution after 9/11, too. So obviously it's a big deal. Mm-hmm. I think that, like, the Bush administration and everybody,
they have a face and, like, a name to, like, put out there. Of, like,
yeah,
a
villain. And they felt, like, a lot of pressure to, like, do something strongly or, like, act. He was interviewed without a lawyer. It's really up in the air on whether he not or whether he asked for a lawyer or not. Mm-hmm. Basically, he said he wasn't going to talk without a lawyer, and he said he wanted a lawyer, and they just interviewed him anyways, and they just kept going. And it turned into this huge thing because there was people that knew that he asked for a lawyer, and this one girl got fired, like, from the CIA or something like that. She got fired because she was like, he asked for a lawyer, and they're just like, we're going to have to let you go. It seems like you're unhappy here. And she's like, what? And the prosecutor for America or whatever, I don't know if there's, like, a fancy name for it, but he's like, oh, he didn't ask for a lawyer, it's fine. Like, so it was like they basically broke his constitutional rights. I guess the way they interviewed him, they kept him in a train car in Afghanistan. It was like that was his holding cell while they interviewed him. They put him on a gurney and they strapped him to it and they put a blindfold over him, so like it's pretty fucked up. It doesn't look, he looks, like,
dang, insane. Very Black Ops.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, they for sure were, like, violating his rights. Well, he was kept in custody for 54 days without a lawyer, even after he had asked for one. He pleads not guilty to all the charges against him. And the statement says that he doesn't switch back to American side after he finds out, like, the real story behind 9/11. And so 8 of the 10 charges ended up being dropped, mostly because things got so messy and they couldn't use half of his interview. The interview was...
human rights is a bitch in the court of law.
Yeah, so the interview was used for national intelligence things. Like, they could still use it for intelligence reasons, but they couldn't use it in a criminal case. So anyways, he does get charged with 2 counts, and he was sentenced to 20 years for conspiracy to kill nationals of the U.S. overseas, providing resources to terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda. And then during his prison time, he won a lawsuit that allowed Muslim prisoners to pray together. So,
good for him.
He's now out of prison, and his whereabouts are not known to the public. And he's not allowed to have any device that connects to the internet, which I would like to know how the fuck they...
track that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, nobody knows where he is, so he could be being watched 24/7, who knows. But, like, in this day and age, to not have anything that connects to the internet whatsoever...
like, that's a tough, like...
you couldn't live in any society.
No. Or, like, how do you have a job?
Yeah. How do you have a job? How do you date?
Wow. It's a tough probation. Interesting.
Yeah.
Does he ever write a book or anything? No? Not when
he's in prison? No, he's, like, fucking gone. Like, witness. He's probably dead, honestly. I wouldn't doubt it if they killed him. So, anyways, the daughter of this Spann guy, the CIA agent, she is fucking annoying. You can tell that this is, like... her fucking personality trait. She's like, my dad was the first death in, like, the war on terror, and so it's, like, her whole, like, that's her thing. She's never gonna have her own personality. Like, this is her now. So she says that she thinks John Walker Lynn is, like, a terrorist because he could have spoken up and said something about the uprising that was about to happen. Which, even if he did, he would have gotten shot by one of these other
prisoners. What would that have done?
Yeah, it would have just made it happen faster, I think. But, and, yeah. It would have still happened, so I think she's just a little crazy. And then since John, there have been hundreds of Americans who have been charged for joining Al-Qaeda, but because of timing and their involvement, their charges aren't as harsh. So I think it was like 400-something guys, and some were higher up, so they were able to like leverage their knowledge for shorter sentences, and some of it was just like long enough after 9/11 that they didn't charge it. Like this one guy tried to bomb a New York subway in the name of Al-Qaeda, and they only gave
him. I feel like I remember that. Was that like the minivan or like the SUV that was in the middle? It was like
2010, 2011-ish. But yeah, he only got 10 years in prison. But it's like, that guy was like actively trying to terrorize America. Jeez. I don't know. So that's my story.
Yeah. Well done. I like that. Wild.